We are Dakota Talk Radio, and we're coming to you from Lake Andy, South Dakota, on the Yankton Sioux Reservation, among the Ehunktuan Dakota Nation. And we were just visiting with Pearl Galbranson, who is the sexual assault and domestic violence outreach specialist and trainer. And going over some of the basic information about DV, domestic violence. And I have with me right now Lynn, who is our director at the Women's Lodge, which is a domestic violence shelter located here in Lake Andy, South Dakota. And I'd like to thank Lynn for joining us today and taking time away from your job to speak to our listeners about what services are available and how we can, how those who need the services can contact you and contact the shelter. So again, we're speaking with Lynn, the director of the Women's Lodge, the domestic violence shelter located in Lake Andes. And Lynn, can you, welcome, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Donna. Thanks for having me this afternoon. My family came to the Lake Andes area in December of last year, and I've been part of the organization since February. I'm very honored to be a part of this organization. I think it's great. They do great work here in the community, and it's been a blessing in my life to be a part of it.
Thank you. Thank you. And as she said, she started in February of this year, and Lynn's doing an excellent job. We have the director and we have an advocate full-time on staff. We also have some student interns that are available to help at the shelter as well. Many times the shelter may not have anyone there, and then again, all of a sudden, it can be full.
In a matter of minutes, the dynamics of the shelter can change. Very rarely are we empty. Like I said, it's a big service in the community, and we have the capacity to house up to 18 women and children is our basic availability there. And then we do have the four interns that are with us this summer that are a big help because they're in-house 24 hours, and the shelter can be fully manned at that point.
Mm-hmm. Or womaned.
Yes.
Because, of course, it is a shelter, and all the staff are women, and the services are specifically for women.
And children.
And children, women and their children. If we do have an instance of a male who needs assistance, we have provided for that, but, of course, they don't stay at the shelter. They would be assisted at a hotel room or, you know, that sort of thing. And that doesn't happen very often, but once in a great while, we may have to provide that assistance to a male. Let's go ahead and talk about those services and what that means. When a woman comes into shelter, what happens?
Well, the first thing that happens is we want that woman to feel sheltered and safe. Mm-hmm. We try to bring them in and get them settled into the shelter, make them feel as at home as possible. And then we begin the process of helping them deal with the chaos that's gone on in their life. Most of the time, especially if there's children, it takes a little while for them to get settled in. And a lot of times they come in the wee hours of the morning or have been brought there by the police. So we try to work through the trauma first. And get them settled in and get them safe and make them know that it is a safe place for them to be.
Right, because that is exactly what shelter means.
Absolutely.
It's a safe place. The primary goal of a domestic violence shelter is the safety of the woman and if she has children with her. And when a woman comes into shelter, she won't necessarily... It's difficult to be a shelter because you're sharing a household with many times many other people, other children. It's not an easy place to be. And there may be misconceptions about shelter and what that means. You know, a woman doesn't come to shelter just because she wants to go somewhere and have a little vacation. It's not about that. It's about her needing assistance. It's about her needing a safe place to be, about her knowing that her children are going to be safe. And so
fed and a roof over their head and
many times clothed.
Absolutely.
Many times women and their children come in with just the clothes on their back. And so those basic necessities are provided.
Yes.
There's if clothing is needed, we can we have clothing. We have the the daily toiletries,
personal hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
Socks and underwear, toothbrushes, hairbrushes,
right.
Just the things that, you know, those of us that aren't living in that chaos take for granted on a day-to-day basis. These women and children come to us with, literally, like you said, with the clothes on their back.
Mm-hmm.
So part of making them feel safe and feel secure is giving them some of those just basic necessities of life.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that. We, you know, try to keep the refrigerator full and the pantry full, and they know they're going to be okay for a while. And then we start the assistance with, if they need legal help, we step in and try to help any way that we can, from a legal standpoint, from protection orders to attorneys and those sort of things. Assistance with social services, if they need help working through that process, through assistance with even TANF and food stamps and
mm-hmm.
those things. Anything that we can be an advocate for, we help with employment applications.
Housing, trying to find housing.
Absolutely.
Housing is
a huge issue. And that's one of the first things that we try to help women get on the path of finding those things. Because, I got to hear a little bit of yours and Pearl's conversation earlier, and housing, especially in this area, is so limited and so hard to find that it's a major issue. And it's a major reason why women go back, because it is so hard,
mm-hmm.
Especially when they have, multiple children.
Mm-hmm.
And apartment living may not be the best place for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find a home with a yard and a place to take children to.
And if you're not employed.
Absolutely.
There's that whole other issue of the economics,
right.
Of setting up a whole new household.
Yep.
Because,
again, they leave with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to us with no furniture, no beds, no sheets, no towels, not even a fork or a plate,
mm-hmm.
To eat off of. So it's a completely the ones who are able to remove themselves and to not go back to that situation. There's so many steps that have to be taken to get them to that place.
And that's what the advocate does. The advocate, and of course, as director, you also do advocacy work.
Absolutely.
There's not a large staff.
No.
Like I said, only two full-time people. And we all do advocacy, whether we're working in a shelter program or we're visiting with our sister and trying to help her, or our auntie or our mom or grandma. There's a lot of violence against elders nowadays, too. And so, when a woman comes into shelter, the advocate works very, very hard with her and tries to allow her to have some private time, tries to allow her to gather her thoughts, or make that space to gather her thoughts. It's always an issue because, like I said, it is a household with many people living there. But it's also important for the woman to be able to have some privacy, to gather her thoughts, to maybe just relax. maybe for the first time ever, to relax and not have her guard up, not be waiting for the next
shoot,
maybe
ball,
the
so
next
speak.
Blow or the next that intimidating look that we were talking about earlier that can send chills through us. And so those things are really they're really provided for to in the best possible way in shelter. And you know, to those women who work in shelter, it's not really a 8-hour job.
No. And it's not a job that you can turn on and off. You don't get to set your own hours. You know, you're there when the need is for you to be there.
Mm-hmm.
What we talked about the interns a little bit, and we're very lucky to have that resource to us, because when it's just a two-man show, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is a real, it's a reality in our life.
And we just went through that when you first came on.
Yes, we did.
Lynn and the Advocate ran that shelter for how many months?
Five months before we got interns in.
And so that's two people who are running a household for maybe many people living there, and trying to help them search for those resources that they need to once again continue with their life. It's difficult work, but all the advocates I've talked to and the shelter workers have pretty much dedicated their lives to this work. And there are some people that it's too difficult for, and they may stay for a little while and realize that this is really hard for me. It's hard for me to do this work, and you know, I need to find something else, and that's fine. But for the majority of people who go into shelter work, it becomes their life.
It can be all-consuming, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you learn how to leave it, some of it at the shelter. I don't think you can honestly ever say that you leave it all there, but you do learn how to leave some of it there. But the rewards, it's definitely not a get-rich job, not from a monetary standpoint, but
mm-hmm.
Seeing these women and children heal, the ones that move, you know, go on and move forward, there's no value, mm-hmm. no price mm-hmm. that you could put on that, because you see, especially the children, you see such a change in them from the time they come into shelter out of the chaos, and in just a few days you see them open up and the smiles come back and the laughs come back. And so that's the part that you have to take home with you. You mm-hmm. have to take the good things that you see
mm-hmm.
and have a heart to know that you're going to touch somebody. Mm-hmm. But being touched, for me, has been a huge part of the job.
And I think that, you know, for children, you know, they adapt so quickly. And when children are in an environment where they feel safe and they feel loved, they can adapt to that. So anybody would.
Yeah.
Anybody would, child or adult.
Yeah.
For women, that will not come as quickly, because the woman understands that, you know, what possibly waits for her outside the shelter. And also that, you know, she needs to be on the ball here, as well as trying to heal emotionally or physically or what have you from the abusive relationship. She needs to be on the ball and setting up that new household and providing. And so one of the services that the shelter also provides is making sure that the children can maintain their daily life as much as possible, meaning that, you know, they're back in school as soon as possible.
Yep.
They may have to relocate schools.
We do have to, because of transportation and those sort of things, we do have to relocate the children sometimes to the local school here. But we get them back in. We get them, you know, we help them with school supplies. A lot of times they come to us and have, you know, left their backpacks, and so they need new school supplies and those sort of things. So We get those together for them. Now, you know, we're getting real close to school time again, so we'll be trying to, you know, make some calls and see if we can get some donations in for school supplies for the children that we have in shelter now. Because school starts here August the 20th, I believe, is when school starts. So it's not a long time off. And but we do try to get them back to their day-to-day routine. A lot of our moms work, you know, so we make arrangements to be sure that there's child care before and after school or whatever they need to be able to keep them in their jobs and what little bit of financial security that they have for the ones of them that do work. You know, we try to do everything we can to keep their day-to-day life as normal as possible.
And, you know, many times I've filled in at the shelter when, you know, we needed someone to take a shift or take a couple of shifts. And one thing that I do want to say is that the times that I have filled in over there, I mean, there, of course, are those many moments throughout the day where it's work, 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 trying to figure out how to get your life back in order again, or to how to finally find some order for yourself. And then there are those moments where we're joking and we're laughing around, and of course that happens, just like in any other kind of daily situation. You know, there's cooking that happens, and people are sharing meals, and we help each other, visiting with one another, maybe watching some TV and laughing at the programs on TV. So it... that's one way we encourage one another and help one another through these times.
You see them, the family dynamic come out, and they, you know, we cook together, we laugh together. We were all sitting in a circle the other day having a conversation, and one of the children just went from lap to lap to lap to lap. So you just, and what happens is, whether they mean to or they don't mean to, we're building a support system. And whether they're in shelter or they're out of shelter, those women and those children that they bonded with while they were there is a support system for them once they leave. So you just, because we were laughing that privacy is not a word that you usually have in shelter, because especially right now, we're really full right now, so there's privacy is not something that you get a lot of, but it's a rare commodity. And we were laughing that, you know, you just go on and everybody knows everybody in an intimate way sometimes. So special knocks on the bathroom door and etc.
Yeah. Now I do know that in the local papers that you have ads for services available. You want to just talk about those a little bit?
We do. Our 24-hour crisis hotline number is 487-7130. And again, that is 24 hours, 7 days a week. So someone mans that number anytime, day or night, you can call. And you'll either get myself, the advocate, or now one of the interns.
And can you give that number again?
It's 487-7130.
Okay.
So, and then on Wednesday nights, one of the ads that's in the paper is a women's support group on Wednesday nights. And we do that starting at 6 o'clock on Wednesday nights. There is child care and transportation available if that's something that our listeners would like to participate in. We just ask that you call the shelter and let us know that you're coming, and we make arrangements to get you from and to if you need us to, again, with child care provided. And we talk about those things that you and Pearl, you know, were talking about earlier, the power and control and the intimidation. You know, most domestic abuse only 1-2% of that is actually physical. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of other things that go on mm-hmm. in households. And we talk about that and try to build some tools and build that support network.
And
like
we're talking about.
To recognize the main thing.
What a woman may be experiencing and not realizing that, oh, yeah, that's happened to me. Yeah, I didn't know that was abusive.
That's not natural. Mm-hmm. That's not the way it's, you know, that it, the relationship is meant to be.
Now, so. You know, this is a good place. I'm looking at from Mending the Sacred Hoop. Mm-hmm. And it's an organization out of Duluth, Minnesota that has worked many years in this area. And so earlier, Pearl and I were talking about the power and control wheel that Sacred Circle does. And that power and control wheel came from Mending the Hoop, the Sacred Hoop. And right here it says, I'm just going to go ahead and read this. Decisions were not finalized without the input from the woman, from the women. And this is from our original ways. Although men were the spokespersons of the family, women were treated with the deepest respect as the givers of life and the backbone of the family. Women and men respected each other's roles. Children were the responsibility of the whole extended family, knowing they were a gift from the Creator. They were not to be used or abused in any way. And, you know, for all of us as Indigenous people around the world, this is real basic way of life that was practiced everywhere. And so that's one of the things that we haven't talked about yet is how the children are used.
Absolutely.
When one is exerting control over another.
We see that a lot in shelter. That, you know, women are threatened with their children. If you leave, you know, I'll take the kids away. You won't be able to see your children. You know, I'll fight you for custody. And sometimes those are all real threats, but mm-hmm. sometimes they truly are just a means of intimidation and trying to make the woman behave or not leave. And that's one of the things that we help with. I mean, we help with attorneys to get you through that process if that's the direction mm-hmm. that you want to go. Mm-hmm. And to protect you as a mother and as a parent and to not let those threats become real.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lynn, I really want to thank you for taking time. And I know you're very, very busy. You know, for our listeners out there, if there's an instance where you may need help or you have a loved one who needs help, once again, that number to call is
487-7130. And that's the Women's Lodge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And check your local papers and look for those little ads in the paper. There's, I think, two or three of them in mm-hmm. there. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about, hopefully next week, is the new program with Richard Milda.
Yeah,
if you'd like to just briefly explain that.
It's a men's re-education group. That was one of the things I thought of when we were talking earlier about women coming to the place that they go, oh, I didn't realize that was abuse. We see the same thing happening in the men's group. We see them seeing that, you know, they don't have to just smack her to see that they're abusing her.
Right.
So there's good things coming out of that group, too.
And the group is?
It's on Thursday nights. It's here at the Resource Center. It starts at 5:30 in the evening, and it lasts till around 8 o'clock, depending on how much discussion we get into. So, again, it's a re-education group. Richard is Native, and he is very passionate about going and, you know, teaching the Native men of the area that it's not traditional. You know, domestic violence is not a traditional thing. And he speaks weekly on Native tradition and that women were sacred and that it was, you know, the position that women have always held in the Native traditional way. So it's not just about that's why he calls it a re-education group, a re-education.
Mm-hmm.
class, because it's not just about don't hit. It's about learn why we left the traditional ways and have gotten to where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, and we will be having a regular program with Richard. And so we'll keep you informed as to when that will begin and when you can listen to it. And once again, hopefully we're getting this all recorded as well, so we can play it again or break it down into pieces. And so it's not something you have to, you know, have to let sink in all at once, because it's tough. It's tough information, and it's hard to listen to. But you know what? We need to listen to it. You know, we need to listen to it, and we need to end the violence. I want to thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be talking to Lynn many more times throughout our programming, and I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate being here. One more time, that number is 487-7130, and we're there with open ears and open hearts.
Great. Damia. Okay. We just had another person walk into the room, and before I bring Pearl back on to close this program, I'm going to ask Jermaine Tremel to sit down with me and talk about these issues of domestic violence, domestic and sexual violence. And just a little while ago, I was talking about how in our original teachings, women were held a status as sacred, because we are life givers and the backbone of the family. And this is all true now. It's all true now, but behaviors show us that women are, we may be the backbone of the family and we may be the life givers, but our status as sacred is certainly not as it used to be. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be talking about these things. And so I'd like to say hello to Jermaine. And Jermaine, if you could pull your chair up and get up to that microphone, because we have to, you know, almost be kissing these microphones in order to make sure that you're able to hear us. Mm. So, Jermaine, you've been listening to the program a little bit, and do you mind if I just go ahead and open it up to you and ask you, what are your thoughts here? What are your thoughts here about domestic and sexual violence in our society today as Native people?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say iyo achante washten apet shus pape, and you pia ke apetu iyo happy cha hena wo niye he oju ukitra pikstar cha hena achante washte hechir. I ke hoi chichapia. My relatives, I greet you with a good heart today, and it's been a good day. One of the things that I was just listening to Lynn and Pearl talk, and it's a great honor to be in the presence of women of this status that talk about these issues in a public, I guess, forum is really the first thing. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at history, I guess I always look at the history aspect of what has impacted our women, our Native women. I work with a lot of Native women in the areas of alcohol and drug abuse. And really what it is in reference to where their self-esteem was impacted, their self-worth, their self-image, their self-identity, all of these things as a woman. And we talk about sacred, you know, wakha, in our Dakota ways. And many of us are women. We don't feel that way. And we don't present ourselves in that manner no more because of I don't like the word colonization, but to put it in the white man's words, it's colonization. And one thing I would like to say that's encouraging aspect of our women is, you know what? I said, all you Native women, you're beautiful women out there, and guess what? You're sobering up, and you're alcohol and drug free, and you're taking your life back. And I see a lot of that happening, and I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud to be able to see that. And be able to take their life back and be able to determine their own destiny, their own journey. And that's good. And to have a voice, because, you know, in a traditional sense, women had a place and had a voice. And it was respected and it was honored. It was revered. today, the impact of colonization has just impacted us, our women, Native women, just less than 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, that's just 50 years. That's not very long. And we can correct it now.
Mm-hmm.
If we would just take the time and not sit and blame.
Mm-hmm.
We got to take action as women, as Native women, and be proud of who we are as Native women, number one. And reclaim our identity, reclaim our womanhood, mm-hmm. and reclaim our voice in a spiritual sense, in a physical sense, in a mental sense, and in another area is the breath,
mm-hmm.
the ethereal.
Mm-hmm.
Those four levels of a woman is very powerful, and that's why we're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that a grandma told me one time, I said, you know, why is it that they say, I know that we bring life forth into this world and we create. I said, but what is the other real reason why we are really sacred? And she said, it's because the women hold more sacred water than the man in their system.
Hmm.
And Mini is sacred to us in any shape or form. When a creation of Wakantanka is able to hold that and be able to extend that out, in other words, to the world, which a woman can when she's in 9 months of gestation of having a baby, see, and then she lets go of that. Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing to have, to be a mother, and to have that right of birthing. And so these things are really part of being a Native woman,
mm-hmm.
of being sacred. And like I said, these things that have impacted us, we really need to look at those. We need to look at those as women. And it can start just, you know, just the beginning of a person thinking about themselves as a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother always used to say to me, she said, everybody has goodness in them, but it's up to them to find that goodness within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when they find that goodness, there's no turning back.
And to share that goodness.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. And that's how we are as women. We're very sharing, loving people as Native people.
Mm.
But one thing we don't do is we don't take care of ourselves sometimes
mm-hmm.
as women. We forget. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You know, because I had a granddaughter ask me, she said, Grandma, you're doing a lot of good work out there. She said, but who's taking care of you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got to think about that. Who is taking care of yourself? You know, you got to start doing that. And a lot of it has to do with environment, you know.
Right.
And it's a choice. You know, one thing I think that's the most beautiful thing in this life is we're able to choose, you know, our life. And that's the part that I admire. And I watch animals. I watch all the creations. And they all have choices.
Mm-hmm.
And we're one of them that has the choice. And so we choose to walk away from the abuse. We choose to walk away from whatever, the alcohol, the drugs, the inducements that we take upon ourselves to destroy ourselves or to numb ourselves
mm-hmm.
from that pain. And that's what it is pain. We don't want to feel that pain no more. And so we take it upon ourselves. And so that's the part where I see a change happening now in Indian country, is that many Native women are changing their lives and they're choosing to do it. And that's a beautiful thing.
And I think it's, you know, it's real important to talk about this right now in this place of where you're of your discussion, because women will have to, women who are in abusive relationships have to many times make that choice over and over and over again. And it most often is not one time, okay, I'm going to leave this now.
Mm.
Hopefully it is. Hopefully it is. And that she has the support and some place to go.
Mm.
But today, it's not that easy.
Mm.
And as we talked about earlier, that, you know, the average time that a woman leaves a very abusive relationship can be up to 15 times.
Mm.
And so we need to recognize what that means,
mm-hmm.
that a woman may have to walk away from her home 15 times
mm.
to be willing to walk out that door and maybe not come back again, but knowing that this may save my life. Mm-hmm. The other part about that is when a woman does leave a relationship, when that relationship is very violent, that's also a very dangerous time for her.
Mm-hmm.
That is most often when women are killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the need to have a good support
mm-hmm.
around you is essential. And as Native people,
mm-hmm.
that's what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be what we're about. You know, you talked about we are loving and giving, and that's true. But we can be very judgmental,
mm-hmm.
very judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to once again reinforce all those things you talked about
mm-hmm.
in our teachings,
mm-hmm.
to reclaim those things for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that for ourselves, then we're able to carry that on to
mm-hmm.
other people that are around to us or who may come to us for help.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be, you know, always be aware of that. When a woman is in an abusive relationship, and in particular if she has children,
mm-hmm.
that it's so very difficult to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thank the Creator if a woman is able to do that once and be able to
mm-hmm.
once again start rebuilding her life.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, you know, you're seeing some changes here,
mm-hmm.
and that's mm-hmm. a good thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of positiveness happening right now. There's like the shelters there. There's people that are caring there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have that immediate support,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you have to go now to the extended family, you know, and sometimes you have to create that extended family. That's not a bad thing.
Yes.
That's not a bad thing,
very important
my
point.
Relatives. It's a good thing to be able to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's really the major step is towards healing,
mm-hmm.
to being a healed person. And how many times that takes, 15, 20, 100 times,
mm-hmm.
at least you know how to go and ask for help.
Yes.
And that's important. And that the systems that are there to help you, that they have that compassion, that caring, and number one is that they know that they're going to be strong, you're going to be strong, and you're going to get over this. It's going to pass, and that you're going to become a stronger person, and you're going to know what not to do and what to do in whatever situation happens after that.
And then be able
that.
To help
yes,
someone else.
Others.
Because others will come.
Right.
Others will come when
mm-hmm.
they see that, you know, you've been able to disengage yourself there.
In a long time ago, the traditional ways were harsh. They're very strict.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you notice now, our people have pulled away very, very quickly from those things,
mm-hmm.
you see, and because again of the impacts that we've come to know and adapted to be in a modern society, I guess you could say. And that's good to a point, but, you know, again, there has to be a knowing,
mm-hmm.
you know, a knowing that when to draw the line and say, no,
mm-hmm.
this has got to stop. I can't take no more. Because I've visited many prisons. I'm called in to pray for women. And you know, there's a lot of women in there that have taken a life which they didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have no recourse because they didn't feel no recourse. And that's
right.
What I believe, is that you got to feel it. You got to feel that you have another choice,
mm-hmm.
and whether you create it or whether it's there automatically with your support system, you see. And so it's important to talk, to be able to talk these things through, because if you don't, and something drastic like this happens and you take action like this, drastic action, that alters the rest of your life, and you can't repeat that.
And that, you know, I hope we have some those people who are working in the helping agencies and organizations are listening, because of everything that Pearl has talked about here, Lynn and Jermaine, it's so important to have that compassion. And you know, most people who are in those helping professions, they do have that compassion. Otherwise, they wouldn't choose to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
But many times the bureaucracy of those agencies can inhibit or actually prohibit them from doing everything they can to help a woman when she needs their assistance.
Yes.
So, you know, that's why we have people like Pearl that does the training and talks about these things. And if you're listening out there, you need some training. Maybe it's something that you know, definitely the you know, the shelter program would like to partner with you, and you know, bring in Pearl, and you know, maybe bring in Jermaine, bring in other community people who have some knowledge here to share, and to because we all have to learn. We learn every day, all day long, something. All day long, we're learning something, and to be able to offer help and assistance and the compassion, and to be courageous about those things, to be courageous and allow yourself to help.
Yes, and I think that's really the powerful thing, is that you know, these trainings, that to have them available, and to have people like Pearl and this young man doing anger management. I plan to sit in on his sessions because I want to learn, because, you know, I work with some of the men also in the community, and I want to make sure that, you know, what he's telling, and the only way a lot of times to understand and learn is from the male, and what they're saying and not saying, because that's very, very important. And when these things happen, we question them, you know, and then sometimes we don't follow through. And so I would like to really encourage people, you know, if you can, in some way, some manner, contribute yourself to looking at information like this, mm-hmm. because it's something very simple, and it could make a big impact on your life and even better your life. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to say thank you, Pidonia, mm-hmm. for helping us with this today. And of course, Jermaine is going to be a regular part of this programming, as she's going to be doing the Dakota language program with us once a week on Wednesdays, and we're looking at 2:00 time period for her to do that. So we're going to wrap up. We've been talking now since 1:00 about this issue, and or these issues rather. And we're going to wrap up with bringing Pearl back and talking about some specific areas of training that can be done, and identifying those things that, you know, what is a protection order, what is mandatory arrest. And so we're going to wrap up with that. And once again, this is Donna Hawkins, and this is Dakota Talk Radio. And we are broadcasting from Lake Andy, South Dakota, the Yankton Sioux Reservation among the Ihunktuan Dakota Nation. And we are in the south central part of South Dakota. We have listeners from who are far, far away. Throughout the day, I've been saying we had listeners yesterday, even over in Australia and up in Canada. And we're happy for that, because we can share this information about, you know, who we are over here and what we do here, and to be able to look at serious issues, as well as lots of times maybe Jermaine and I are going to get on here and just kind of crack up too. So we're not always this serious, but this does call for some serious conversation. And welcome back again, Pearl.
Well, thank you, Donna.
And let's begin by, let's identify exactly what is an order of protection.
Well, an order of protection can be obtained through the local clerk of courts. And it is a petition. It's a petition that is filled out by the petitioner and by the person who has the protection order. And there is a lot of questions about, usually it's a female that is requesting a protection order. And so there are a lot of questions about the household, the children, herself, descriptions, and about the person who is doing or threatening to do harm to her. And then there is a section that is on the relief of the protection order, what the courts can do to protect her or to restrict the abuse from occurring again. And so it's a complicated piece of paper. And so you can pick one up through the local clerk of courts, wherever that might be, mm-hmm. and or you can go to here, the Women's Lodge, mm-hmm. and they will assist you with being able to fill out the protection order, to plead to the courts, for the courts to say, no, this is not going to occur again, and
if it does.
And if it does, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, for that whole process to occur, the protection order has to be filled out, and a judge has to sign it. And so when a judge signs the order, it's considered to be a temporary order of protection. Mm-hmm. And then after the judge signs the order, then an order will be given to the local sheriff's department and local law enforcement agencies, and so that it can be served on the respondent. And the respondent is the person that the protection order is against. And after that, then, there will be a court hearing whereby the parties will appear in court and the judge will determine whether or not there's enough evidence that a permanent order of protection will be issued by the courts. Mm-hmm. And if so, then that order can be issued from the time frame. The limit now in South Dakota is 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so then that is the process. Now, if the protection order is violated and those conditions are listed in the protection order itself, then that is a crime. And a violation of a protection order is a crime. It's a Class 1 misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. So it's criminalizing domestic violence. And that is something with the onset, when the protection orders were first established, that is what the intent of the people who pushed through this legislation or had in mind. Mm-hmm. And a protection order, if a person has a protection order, that person is able to move wherever she or he chooses to move to and should be protected. A person should not have to obtain another protection order if you choose to leave the immediate area. For instance, if I obtained a protection order here, then I should be able to go to North Dakota, to Spearfish, to New Mexico. And because of a federal law called Full Faith and Credit, that protection order will be honored. And of course, it's much more complicated and detailed than what I'm able to explain.
Right.
But it is a tool. It is one tool that people are able to utilize to try and maintain their safety. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fleeing to a shelter and relocating is another tool. You talked about mandatory arrest, and mandatory arrest is a provision that is specifically for law enforcement. That, you know, if a violation occurs, then if an officer has probable cause to arrest, then he should arrest with or without a warrant. But the main terms is probable cause. If an officer has probable cause that a crime occurred, then there will be an arrest, and that's what mandatory arrest does.
And that officer doesn't have to see bruises. He doesn't have to see.
Well, he has to. That officer must believe that a crime occurred. Mm-hmm. So obviously there is evidence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what happens is that, you know, we get a little bit of information and we don't always have all of it, and so then we make some assumptions about it. And so law enforcement officers do their best with the information that they have, and they're there to serve and protect. And we have to believe that. Domestic violence occurs and it is a very complicated crime. It is a crime that occurs everywhere in our society. It occurs within our own extended families, our immediate families. We all have judgments about it, mm-hmm. because it is so prevalent, and that is what makes it so very difficult. Makes it very difficult for victims to be safe and for batterers to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. There's trainings that the South Dakota Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault provides. I provide law enforcement training. I've provided clergy training, domestic violence in the workplace training, all on response to domestic and sexual violence. And of course, there are many other people that are qualified to do workshops and in-services and trainings. And if there ever is a need, if you are listening and you would like more information on domestic violence, sexual violence, the implications of, or how it impacts your particular workplace, I'd be more than happy to share information with you. And all you would have to do is to contact the resource center here, and they would be able to get in touch with me.
Also, you have an 800 number.
We do. That 800 number is 1-800-572-9196. And that number is routed into the state office in Pierre,
Central office?
Yeah, the central office.
And that number, one more time.
1-800-572-9196.
Great. And, gee, I didn't even have to hardly ask you any questions. You just zipped right on through that. It is so good,
oh,
girl.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you, Donna. I'm glad you think so.
Yes, I do. Pearl has been here. She's done law enforcement training here in Lake Andes. How many times now?
Oh, over the course of the years, a number, I guess.
Lots of times.
Yeah, several times.
And advocacy training, mm-hmm. for advocates. Judicial training, almost any kind of training Pearl can do, except she can't train your dog, because she had a little dog, and as a matter of fact, his name was Little Dog, and he was really, she died.
And he ran away.
So, yeah, she, we can partner up, we can come into your workplace, talk about workplace violence. Law enforcement, there's always, because it's so difficult to have all the law enforcement officers there at one time, those trainings are normally broken up into two days. So one set of law enforcement officers can come while the other works, and then again the next day. So that can all be arranged to work to your best benefit. And hopefully we have listeners down at the tribal hall, and there may be some training that you might like Pearl to come in and do down there for you. The possibilities are great, and we certainly promote training in this area, because it's been said over and over throughout the last couple hours, this is a very complicated issue. It's complicated, it's heart-wrenching, and many times those people who abuse us and batter us, we do love. Mm-hmm. We do love. It's hard to leave, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. we cannot allow this to happen. All we have to do is simply not allow the violence to happen in our communities. And we have resources that can help us end the violence. We have different ones within our communities, and those like Pearl who don't live right here in our community, that can help us understand these things, that can help us create a way out of it, and to come back to our original teachings and treat each other with with compassion and respect, and to treat each other, to be courageous about that, and to have that fortitude to keep plugging away, plugging away. You've been doing this, I would say, over 20 years, but it's probably closer to over 25 years, huh?
I think so. I don't usually get my calculator out and do that.
Yeah.
It's too hard these days. But
for
quite some time, quite some time. And I do want to say that, you know, I've worked in Indian country throughout the state. The South Dakota Coalition has helped develop and start programs in Indian country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within our membership, there are 9 nations in the state of South Dakota, and 8 of those programs that are located on reservations are members of the South Dakota Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And I see phenomenal work, courage, and progress, as Jermaine said over the radio, or just a little bit ago, regarding the strength of Native women and the courage that, you know, throughout colonization and the horrible effect colonization has had in Indian country, because it is the time span is shorter, that there is almost a rebirth of really, really incredible programs that are being developed and are already developed and working, and people are working them, and there's an incredible amount of success. And so I think that, you know, if we could all take a lead from you all, it would really, really be great in non-Indian country.
Okay.
So thank you, Donna. I really appreciate being here, and look forward to our next time together. Thanks.
Yes, and I want to say Nina Wopta Tonka Hecha, to you too, Pearl. Pearl has been a longtime friend. She was my mashke as well as a colleague, and I have a great deal of respect and love for her. So it's always good when she comes here. We have time to visit. We have our working time, and now she's able to come here and get out on the cyberspace. Cyberwave, cyberspace, and talk to whoever might be listening to us. So it is 3:00 p.m. I can't believe this. We're being very timely, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And so we're going to end our program today. I am going to put some tunes back on for you to listen to. Once again, this is Donna Hawkes. This is Dakota Talk Radio. And we are broadcasting from Lake Andy, South Dakota. And if you have any comments, suggestions, constructive, please. And if you have ideas, topics that you would like us to explore, we have an email address set up. That is Dakota Talk, DakotaTalk. @yahoo.com, DakotaTalk@yahoo.com, and just leave us a message there. And so back to some tunes, and we didn't get to so many things, teen dating violence, but of course once we start talking about this, the intricacies of these issues, you know, really demand that we try to go delve deeply into them. And so all those things we'll be talking about, you know, at another time. So thank you all for listening to us, and for hopefully taking something good away from this.
Hey, hey, oh, yo, ho.